Why is it that motherhood can feel so hard? Why is it that just modern living in general can feel so hard?
We as humans are animals and that we need certain things to thrive and to function, but then our society kind of forgets that, set up in a way that just doesn't support that.
It's easier to understand why humans need a certain type of lifestyle to thrive when we think about ourselves as animals. We all know that dogs need to be going on walk. We know cats need something to scratch, and we are really truly living outside of what we like need in almost every angle and degree. Okay, welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I am your co-host, Dr. Morgan McDermott, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share our natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you've been looking for through our fresh, functional, and balanced lens. And today, we're talking all about the human animal. This is one of my favorite topics to talk about because I think it lays the context for us to understand where we came from and where we are today in our modern society, and how and why exactly things feel hard in the way that they do, or how we have to be so intentional about the way that we live in order to sort of combat some of these different aspects and things. Some of them may be obvious to you, but I guarantee you, you're gonna learn a lot in this episode, and we have a lot of resources that we mentioned too that can help with fleshing out these ideas to be a bit bigger or more well-rounded. We bring in the blue zones, we bring in anthropological data, and it's just a big philosophical conversation that I think is helpful for us to understand what is exactly happening in our modern world and what makes modern motherhood positioned differently than, you know, maybe we wish it was. So I hope you enjoy and have a great listen.
All right, we are back and we are going to be talking about a thought-provoking topic. We love to kind of go into these philosophical, cultural, you know, what is sort of going wrong, how do we do it better, situations as to why we're in the pickles that we're in as moms and as women. And a lot of it comes down to these larger ideas. And today we're talking about how we as humans are animals and that we need certain things to thrive and to function, but then our society kind of forgets that, or it's set up in a way that just doesn't support that. I think that I've summarized that well. Is that kind of what we're talking about, Dr. Morgan? You want to kind of summarize in your
own? So what I wanted to talk about with this podcast is that it's easier to understand why humans need a certain set of type of lifestyle factors in their life to thrive when we think about ourselves as animals. Because we all know that like dogs can't eat grapes and chocolate and, you know, they need to be going on walks. Otherwise, they're not going to be happy and they're going to be obese. And we all know these different things. We know cats need something to scratch. We know that like a mouse in a little habitat is going to want a hideaway, a place for it to be covered. Otherwise, it's going to be very severely stressed out. So it's easier, I think, because sometimes it can just feel a little bit like, gosh, everything's against us. And it's like, well, I mean, we need to understand where we came from in order to thrive in this modern culture. Because the reality is, unfortunately, we're not going back to like savanna living. We're not going back to the bands and tribes. And obviously there's a lot of benefit to our modern life now that we didn't have back then. And even just like food security, like the stress of finding food was always there in those kinds of settings. And so we don't have to have that now. But I think it is really, really, really interesting when we think about ourselves as an animal in like a captivity, you know? What was that doctor's name who gave that amazing presentation when we were first year medical students, when we went to the Naturopathic Gathering in Tempe, Arizona at SCNM? Do you remember him? Oh, Matt Berall, Dr. Matt Berall.
Oh,
the pediatric ND?
Yes, okay. Yes.
He gave a presentation to us like as ND students. It was called the Naturopathic Gathering, and it was just like ND students from all over the country got together for the weekend, and all these like elder naturopathic doctors would come and, you know, impart their wisdom on us, and it's awesome. And Dr. Matt Berall gave a whole presentation about this idea, and it stuck with me so much. It like really resonated with that part of me because I had this like strong animal background, and ecology and evolutionary biology and anthropology and how we've like evolved and changed in time and how our bodies have adapted to these different scenarios and settings and what do we need in order to live optimally and stuff. And he was explaining how there's like never been a shark kept in captivity past a certain number of days, like say it's like less than a year or something. And this was a while ago, so I don't know the exact stats, but they cannot like replicate whatever it is the shark needs to feel happy and to live. They can't replicate it in a confined captive setting in the kind of way that they want and need to. Or, like pandas have this like crazy fertility issue when they're in zoos, like they just won't breed and it's been really difficult. And we don't know sometimes why these things are the way that they are. But like even okay, like mice are often used in research labs. Sorry, I'm still kind of like out of breath with my pregnancy. So sometimes I feel very tired from just even talking. So,
Because you're an animal and you need to go rest and sleep
yeah,
in the sun. Like,
I imagine.
horses just graze and eat grass and rest all day. And I'm like, that's really what we should
Oh
be
my gosh,
doing.
I wonder if animals have first trimester symptoms. Do you think?
Oh, I bet they do. Because you know what? Side tangent, not to get off topic. My dad's a vet, and we sometimes nerd out on medical stuff, but we've never really sat down and talked really about things. So over the holidays, I was talking to my dad about a patient and PCOS, and I think my sister had asked, like, how does that work or whatever? And then my dad chimes in and he's like talking about it. I was like, wait, do you know about PCOS? He's like, oh yeah, animals get it all the time. I was like, what do you mean? Like, I did not know that animals get these metabolic diseases like
In the same
humans do.
way. Yeah.
I was like, I thought that was unique to humans because of our diet being so messed up and stuff. But he was like, oh yeah, no. He was like telling me all of these things and how he was talking about how he used to want to go into infertility in animals, basically, and how so much of what I talk about with humans was almost exactly the same of what he was talking about with cows and horses and dogs and all of this stuff. And my mind was blown because I didn't realize that animals had these issues. But at the same time, my mind was, okay, would all animals since the beginning of time have these issues? Or is it also a product of our modern food? You know, we give dogs and all of these animals, these foods, like the horses are grazing on grass that's sprayed with glyphosate. Is that what's contributing to their PCOS? Like, they're also in a more artificial and different environment than maybe their natural ancestors were. And I don't know, there's maybe no way to know if animals had those kind of issues back then, but it really blew my mind where I was like, wow, we really aren't that different. We are kind of all the same,
All the
you
same.
know?
Yeah. I mean, that's really cool. And I think I do think back on Doug, my dog was a father last year.
Oh, Father.
And he sired 9 puppies. And the female, Daphne, had kind of a hard postpartum. Like she lost a bunch of hair. And maybe part of that is normal, but it's like it took it out of her. And our friend Jenna, who has the female, like is choosing not to breed her again because she's like it seemed like it was a little too hard on her body. And anyway, yeah, so who knows? I mean, yeah, maybe animals do. They get sick, they don't feel well, nobody really knows, or they have other
I
symptoms.
bet they don't feel well. I bet there are certain things that are not
Or like they're sleeping all the time,
real.
Definitely we know when they're very, very pregnant at the end they act differently. But anyways, so sorry about my out of breathness, but back to Matt Burrell and the conversation that I was trying to get through. They know even the mice in research laboratory settings, if they're going to be able to test them and have them be viable subjects, they have to still provide the things in the cage that a mouse would want, like those hiding places, as I mentioned, keeping it kind of dark and not like scary where there's, a picture of a cat like looking into the cage or something. Like they have to control for these types of things because that animal is wired to expect certain things. And this brings me back to this conversation, which we've kind of like dabbled this topic through several episodes, and because it's one of our like main, theories from which we work. And the continuum concept is a book, which we'll put in the show notes, that is a little bit hard to read because it's like from the 60s and it's definitely not like politically correct anymore, and it's also a little dense. Jean Leadoff is her name who wrote it, and she is an anthropologist and she goes down and studies with these indigenous cultures and watches the way that they mother. And it's sort of like the original text from which the idea of attachment parenting came from, like baby wearing, nursing on demand, co-sleeping, blah, blah, blah. Although those are just like natural things, but it's because of like her studying and finding this. And, you know, at that time in the 60s, it was like very pro formula, very pro, like, you know, women going back to the workplace and stuff like that. And so there wasn't as much of maybe even like, and like birth was changing rapidly and everything was changing. So anyways, the continuum concept though has this idea throughout it that I think matches with this idea really well, which is the idea that a baby comes out and is born and has a certain set of expectations about what their world is going to be like. And other animals have the same thing. When a shark hatches out of its egg, or sometimes sharks are actually live born, which is so weird to me. Like, why is it one way or the other? There must be like two different main types of sharks. I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah, that's weird.
But like when they hatch or they're born, they expect to be in what? Water? Like not air. Okay. They expect to like eat something probably pretty right away, or, you know, like octopuses or whatever will eat the body of their dead mother who like died over the nest of them. Or, you know, there's a lot of different animals like in these settings, or like a puppy expects to root around and nurse and find its mother right away and hear its siblings. And all they really can do is like smell and that's it. And then as those babies of whatever species grow, there's still this like set of expectations that their biology has been hardwired and adapted to over time so they can survive. And our set of expectations as human babies is that we will be nursed, or we will find the breast. And this is where the breast crawl, which if you want to YouTube the breast crawl, it's amazing. Absolutely minutes old newborn babies can crawl up the body of a mother and find the breast and latch on themselves. It might take an hour, but they can do it. And it is survival. If they couldn't do it, and maybe the mother was passed out or so exhausted or something, you know, fatal happened to her, the baby could at least get like some, you know, initial nutrition or whatever it is. So there is like these things in place, the rooting reflex, the smell, the reason why newborns can have theirs, you know, whatever. So we have these expectations, and the continuum concept is that it's like a continuum of what do we expect as a species and how do we like meet those needs. And where it interplays with modern society and modern mothers is that, like, even if you don't have kids, just being a human in this modern world is outside of the realm of what our bodies expect in so many different ways. Right. And we want to just be able to live in this modern world and it to be fine and us to be optimal. And I think we need to recognize that there is a fundamental problem underlying all of this. Like, and we can come up with our different ways of fixing it. Like when red light therapy first came out, I was so annoyed. I was like, oh, yeah.
I was gonna just say something about that.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, go outside. You want to know the original red light therapy? I mean, and here's the thing. I am actually like, I love our Loom box and my husband uses it all the time. And it's like such a targeted health tool. But at first the concept of it, the idea angered me, annoyed me, felt so disconnected because it's like, what are you trying to replicate? You're trying to replicate us getting infrared wavelengths because we need them for our biological processes to take place because we evolved underneath the sun.
Yeah, I know. There was actually,
as we're talking about birth and postpartum support, I want to share an underrated tip with you. That tip is to continue taking your prenatal. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally demanding phases of a woman's life. Many women stop taking their prenatal after birth, but we recommend taking it for at least the first 9 months postpartum or the entirety of the time that you're breastfeeding. My favorite prenatal is Needed's Prenatal Multi, and it's the most robust formula that I've seen in the market. It contains bioavailable nutrients in their evidence-based dosages, well above the bare minimum that a lot of prenatals settle for. Their quality standards are top tier with transparent third-party testing, and over 10,000 practitioners now recommending the brand. And now we have the results from their IRB-approved clinical study that confirm the results of what we've been seeing clinically. Women who take the prenatal multi have significantly higher blood levels of critical nutrients for pregnancy and postpartum. This includes vitamin D, B6, B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2. Only women in the Needed group reach the adequate, sufficient levels of vitamin D. Vitamin D plays a big role in your immune health, your mood, and your energy production. all things that are really important during your postpartum season. And while there's many different ways that you can support yourself postpartum, continuing to take your prenatal is a really simple, easy way to cover all your bases. It's one of the most impactful habits that we can have, and Needed makes it easy. Learn more about the study at thisisneeded.com/thrive and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Yes, healthy mother, like a little affirmation for yourself.
Just a post that I saw today, and it was such a good post. I think it was by the garden company that I bought a course from to learn how to garden. But it literally said that. It was like, they'll get you to spend money on red light therapy when, you know, nature did it best with the sun. And they'll try to get you to buy supplements, but nature did it best with, you know, the kale grown in the ground. And they'll try to get you to buy a grounding mat, but nature did it best by just being out on the earth. And like, there was all of these examples of literally nature is superior to all the things, even that it's the best technology that we can invent. Nature still far surpasses that. And just like you, it is annoying sometimes. And then I also get the reality that in our modern world, just like the vitamin D thing where people are like, we shouldn't take vitamin D, just get it from the sun. But then the reality is, okay, but we're not. And so if we're not, do we just roll over and be like, this isn't natural, but then you're still not getting it. And so then you're having a lot of health consequences. Where is that healthy medium of how do we strive to do what is natural and what our body is meant to? And then how do we have to make shifts and changes and tweaks and hacks to actually survive in this modern world because of the world that we're living in, which isn't ideal, but it is the reality currently. And so, totally hear what you're saying.
Because ideally, it's not like, oh, 3 times a week, I'm putting red light therapy on my face or my back or whatever. Ideally, it's 8 hours of my day is spent under the soft sun, mm-hmm. getting a microdose for a longer period of time. And like, how does that interplay with my biology and all of the different things that all of the different wavelengths of the sun, okay, a complete set of wavelengths, mm-hmm. does for me? And so anyway, that's just like one example, I guess, through which I want us to understand how out of place we are living. You know, there's the terrain theory situation where it's like a goldfish in a clean water bowl or a goldfish in a dirty, like gross water bowl. And the question is, do we medicate the fish? And the fish is sick in the dirty water bowl. It's like, do we medicate the fish or do we clean the water? Like, what do we do? Okay. You know? Right. And sometimes we can't clean the water because it's too big. So sometimes we need to be doing active detoxification, which, gosh, you guys, I saw a post of this pediatric doctor that I respect a lot. I enjoy a lot of things she says, not everything. But she reposted something in her stories the other day that was like, do you have these? And it was a picture of like lungs, a colon, kidneys. And it said, then you don't need to detox your child, or you don't need a detox. I'm like, I'm so badly wanting to write her and be like, wait a minute. So have you like literally never encountered a situation where somebody needed to have more support of those systems? Like you've never done it. Like you've never had a child in your practice that needed some more help with that? Like ever? I'm really surprised. Yeah. I think you need a little more experience or something. Like, you know, and sometimes people will just say these statements. And in general, I understand what she's saying. We do have organs that are cleansing our bodies. We do. And mm-hmm. they can only handle so much. And depending on your genetics, your epigenetics, your daily little micro things, you wake up in the morning, how many products you put on your face, how much stuff is happening, the system gets worn down, guys. Like, it's not rocket science. It happens. And if you've not seen it clinically, like, okay, sorry. Well, let me just tell you, it happens and it exists. And take my word for it.
What about exposures, like mold exposure, or you've flown across the country and gotten into 5 different Ubers that have fragrance from their hangy downy things? It's like, yes, I could see, like you're talking about, in our natural habitat and our natural environment, living in only natural things in a non-polluted world. Yeah, your organs were probably enough outside of being exposed to toxic arsenic and all sort of things. It's like, yes, there is a level of baseline maintenance, but then we have a different reality that we are dealing with where sometimes we do need more support because our body is inundated with things that are beyond what is natural. So we have to support with things that are beyond what is natural.
Exactly. That's the sentence right there. Like, unfortunately, that's not where we are right now. And it's a form of medical gaslighting to be like, well, your body should just take care of it. It's like, cool, but my body is not the body that I had or I would have had, you know, 7,000 years ago. Like, it's just not the same setting. And with even just like, you know, I think about you and I, you're arguably way more healthy than I am in your day-to-day habits. You are. You eat so well, Leah. Like you, I don't even think the people know. You should start doing like what I ate in a day post. It would blow people's freaking minds. It blows my mind still, and I've known you for so long.
You're so sweet.
But
Thank
you
you.
Have like multiple chemical sensitivity type stuff. Like you, I don't enjoy sitting in the Uber. Like I don't love the smell of it, but I will experience zero symptoms after that. Like I won't have a headache.
Yeah.
I won't, and my mom is the same way as you. Like she, I remember growing up, this is my first like experience of this. We would not walk through the shoe department of Dillard's because it was next to the perfume department.
Yeah.
And
Oh, yeah.
it would give her like an immediate headache. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like strong. Hell yeah. Can you imagine the people that work in that department?
No, I literally think about it all the time because I would get migraines. I would get migraines from it. And, but this is the thing, and this is the theory that I have, which isn't necessarily on topic, but I feel like sometimes the healthiest, quote unquote, people that do the healthiest things are the sickest people because they have to be healthy
yeah.
to just survive.
Yes. If you didn't do that, can you imagine?
Yeah. Oh, I would be, I don't even know.
I know.
Not well at all. So the people who are like, oh my gosh, you like are so good about eating breakfast and you're so clean. Oh, you always eat organic. You really prioritize that. Like you have to get up and exercise and do all these things. From the outside, it's like, wow, you're doing so many things. And part of that is, yes, just a striving to want to feel better. But the other part is almost out of necessity because of our genetics or our exposures or whatever is setting us up to have a little bit more challenge. We have to work harder than the average person. I remember we had a roommate once a long, long time ago. Mike and I had a roommate who was in the military and he would do nothing around health. And he would microwave rice and plastic. He would use all the toxic things. He never had any health issues. He had a six pack no matter what he ate. It was just, it was so infuriating to be like, what in the world? How does this not affect you? And maybe it would one day catch up with him, but it just felt like nothing really seemed to affect him and he could do anything he wanted, eat anything he wanted. And it's like, I just never had that luxury. So yes, on the outside, it's like I'm having healthier habits than him, but it's because I have to just survive.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I'm glad you bring that up because people just, they don't know. I mean, you would be debilitated. Like, and same thing with me, probably how sick I always was. Like I would probably be, and I don't eat, I mean, I eat well, better than the average Joe, but not as, you know, much as you, in my personal opinion, at least. But we both do all these like just kind of ingrained in us health things. And then it's a lot of it's also about what we avoid and what we don't do. I think that's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, and then bring it back to the animal conversation. It's, you know, some people might even argue, and it's just so hard to know because, okay, that person who's not impacted because they don't have symptoms, are they actually more evolved to live in this different kind of world? You know, is there an evolutionary process that we're watching before our eyes of the kind of people like me who are maybe more genetically designed for that natural way of living? Like I need sunshine. I need to eat like real food. I can't really be around toxins. But then this new version of a human can totally be around Wi-Fi and EMFs and toxins and all of this crappy toxic food and totally survive and are fine. Is this like a new evolution? But we're kind of de-evolving, but almost evolving like Wall-E, where everything's just trash and all this stuff. Is that actually better? Are they going to actually survive? Or are they just not the canary in the coal mine where all of our bodies still in this evolutionary state need that? It's just some of us are alert to it sooner than others. And maybe he develops cancer, you know, in his 50s because he didn't have any symptoms, but all of a sudden like it expresses that way. I don't know the answer to that, but it is a thoughtful thing to think about of, are there groups of people genetically who are evolving with this unhealthier culture that will actually survive better than us?
And we would just like die out.
We can't be around technology or all of the chemicals and the toxins. It's like we just can't do it, but neither can the modern animals of this world.
Well, and you know, I think about that with lip and tongue tie stuff like all the time with myself and my kids. Like if we didn't have, you know, maybe there would be some wet nurse in the community who could help me, but otherwise my babies would just like not get milk, you know, they would just die because they,
well,
yeah.
I think it's Ben Lynch. It might not be Ben Lynch, but it might be somebody else who's big in the methylation world. But they're saying that we're de-evolving for that same reason.
Yes, it was Ben Lynch. Yes.
Because we're supplementing these imbalances. As morbid as it sounds, there is no natural selection of the stronger genes. Mm-hmm. And we're keeping people alive. where in nature would normally not survive. And so then we pass on our genes and things like IVF and infertility. Like, technically, if we're going to talk about it, my husband would not be able to reproduce in nature. He would not be able to pass on his genes. And it's very high likelihood that my son has the same genetic issue that he had with his vas deferens from cystic fibrosis. And he would never have created offspring, which is so sad to think about because they're my children and I love them. But Mike would have never created offspring. So that genetic issue that he had would have stopped with him. He wouldn't have passed it on. But now there's another person in the world who can pass it on, you know, to their next child. And so even in something that small, you don't think about it. And it's not like I'm not going to have children because my husband has a genetic issue. But that is on a collective level what is happening, where there almost is this de-evolution where people maybe wouldn't have survived. But then there's also this concept, like you're talking about, of us living like in captivity and who's thriving and who's not in there.
Yeah, that's such an interesting way to think about it, because yeah, what's going to happen in like 700 years, you know, if we could just shoot forward, it'll be so interesting. I don't know. I mean, but we're just doing the best we can right now. And mm-hmm. as much as I am like, I do want to think about those kinds of things, there's zero part of me that is like, yeah, you're right, you shouldn't defend kids like that. It's like, no, because that's the beauty of living in the modern world, is that we do right. get to hack some of this shit. And maybe yeah. there's a future where CRISPR, as much as I'm like scared about CRISPR, which if you don't know what CRISPR is, it's a gene editing ability, mm-hmm. technology, where like, say you had IVF embryos and your girls had Turner syndrome, which is XO. Or is it XXO?
I think it's XO.
Yeah, XO. So they should be XX chromosome.
XY is Klinefelter's. So that's probably what you're thinking of.
Okay, yeah. So they're XO, but they can like fix that with CRISPR. And then you can have genetically normal female baby girls or mm-hmm. whatever. There's a lot of different, you know, chromosomal things, whatever. They can fix a lot of stuff. So what if in the future, it's so much more casual? It's like 3D printing. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to have, it's probably very expensive. You're going to do it in other countries besides America. You're going to go to Mexico, go to North Korea, or not North Korea, oh my God, South Korea. And go have these like procedures done where you clean up your whole DNA system or something, or you're maybe with babies. I don't know how it'll work out, but it's like, yeah, what if that, that's really interesting. But okay. Anyway, I digress. So let's talk about what are the things that a human comes to expect in the world and needs to thrive. And yeah. some of the ways that we know what these would be is through anthropological data and observation of indigenous cultures, and also through mm-hmm. looking at modern blue zones. Blue zones are areas where all over the world where there is like a statistically higher than average number of people that live to be over 100. Mm-hmm. And they have the same 9 major principles. I'm not going to talk about all 9 of them today because they're not as relevant to the conversation, but some of them are. And so it's like, okay, between looking at those 2 chunks of info, the anthropological data, which anthropology, if you don't know what that means, it's like the study of humans, like through time. Yeah. And so it's not anti-religious, like anthropological data and information can go back into like, how did humans evolve from monkeys? It could, but I'm talking about like, as we were humans and we were living in groups and like Native Americans and Native populations throughout the whole culture and indigenous cultures. That's what I'm talking about. So
yeah,
just in case anybody's like, this is BS or whatever. I don't know.
Where did it come from? Monkeys? Yeah, I have my own thought and feeling about all of that, but that's for another time in a private conversation. Coming up.
My thoughts and feelings about that have changed dramatically in time. And I was the girl in that classroom with my anthropology minor learning about like Australopithecus and Homo erectus and stuff. And I'm just like,
ooh. Yeah.
Like, okay, anyways. That's
true there.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, so what do we need? The one of the biggest things to start out with is that, and there are other animal species like this too, but humans are communal beings. We are community-based, cooperation-based. There is a wonderful, beautiful, amazing documentary from like 2008, 2009 that's called I Am, that's by Tom Shadyac, and he talks about this a lot. I don't know where you can find or watch the documentary now, but I'm sure you can stream it somewhere. Really, really highly recommend. And in it, he talks a lot about this idea of how humans are hardwired for cooperation, connectivity, feeling like part of a greater purpose. Like it is as if almost we are all part of a larger organism. In the way that like aspen trees or fungi, like mycelium, can sometimes be, you see one mushroom, but it's really a part of like a whole system. You see one aspen tree, but actually it's part of like the largest living organism on the planet, which is where all the aspen trees underground are connected by the roots. It's like the coolest thing in the whole world. And there's a part of that with humans. And so having community and being supported by community is something that with modern motherhood is a huge failure. And I feel like this is kind of obvious, so I'm not going to tease this one out a ton, because I feel like we all kind of inherently know this and we feel it. But this is where like the whole idea of the lack of the village comes into play. You know, you're postpartum and it's just you and your partner, or maybe just you, and you're trying to raise this baby. And one of like the most brilliant midwives that I've ever spoken with before said that even two parents, raising a baby is too much for two parents, in a newborn specifically, because how do all three of them get all their needs met? Like, they don't. And it would have never been this way. It would have always been a community event, because this new community member has been born. And that throughout history, we think that each child had between like 3 and 10 main caregivers. There wasn't one. Okay. And there wasn't even two. There was at least three, someone, aunties and grandmas and whatever, whoever. People in the community, because they really valued this new baby, because they were going to grow up one day to be a community member. And every person in the community was valuable and brought something important and was needed. So it's not like, oh, it's just like another person to, you know, suck from our resources. Like, that's kind of a mentality that's out there right now about having kids. It's like, we don't have resources for the other things. It's like, hey, whoa, this is such a weird, twisted way to look at it. And we're in the lowest birth rate right now of like time, it seems. And so that's not even a concern. That's not happening. What is a concern is all of the structures of our society are built on like a general level of population and numbers. And if in 30 years, we don't have a generation that's big enough to sustain those, who's going to be doing those jobs? Who's going to take over? Like, what's going to happen there? And I know AI is a part of this conversation now, but do we see how the perspective was so different? Each baby was highly valued by the small band or tribe, which bands and tribes were between 60 and 300 people. And so this all makes much more sense and works much better in these smaller communities.
Did you know proper hydration and mineral balance are key for hormone health, fertility, and preparing for pregnancy? This is why Dr. Morgan and I love Relight by Redmond's, the real salt people. A USA-made electrolyte powder with unrefined sea salt, over 60 trace minerals, plus bioavailable forms of potassium, calcium, and two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. These minerals support hormones, hydration, energy, and overall health. The best part is they taste delicious. I'm really picky about how things taste, and so you can rest assured this is Dr. Leah approved. I love lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan is a strawberry lemonade gal. Head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off your order of electrolytes, real sea salt, natural toothpaste, and so much more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Happy hydrating on your womanhood and fertility journey. Say one thing. I feel that way. So we have a nanny who helps us, and we did when Avia was born, or like not born. I should have done it when she was born, when she was a little bit older, and we both went back to work, even though we worked from home. And we have with our son too, and she helps cook and clean, and it's not just taking care of the child. And I said that the other day. I told Mike, I was like, it takes three people to run a household and have children. Like, the end. It takes three, because if the woman is also doing any sort of working, you know, to bring income into the home. And even in a tribe-based environment, the woman would be out gathering berries or weaving baskets or whatever. It's not like women back then were stay-at-home moms who just sat in their hut and did nothing. Like, there's always been – women have always contributed. It's just whether they get paid from it externally. But women have always done – I mean, we're micro – not micro multitaskers to a max. You know, we can have a baby on our hip and another baby over there, and we're weaving a basket and we're talking to our friends, and it's like, that's just how we're wired. And so it's not that we don't do anything, but even with that, it takes more people to do it all. And the way that my nervous system can even survive, you know, when you're like, how are you surviving without sleep? The sleep has been really hard, but also just on a day-to-day life, at least 2 to 3 days out of the week, I have that extra support. And I cannot even imagine I can't even imagine how anybody does it. I mean, even you, I feel like, don't have as much support with all your kids. And oh, it's so hard. It's like, we need more support, especially from people who can do more than just, you know, watching the children. I don't know. There's just so much to like live.
Yeah. Well, and the cooking, that's the That's the main thing I think that differs is like because we don't have all that much support, like we don't make these really big fancy meals, and it would be great if we did, but that is something that suffers. There's always something that's like a give and take, and that is something that suffers. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately because now with having four kids, like Sunday having her own opinions about what she wants to eat and what she doesn't, she's getting kind of picky. And I'm like, wow, this is really, it's worse, quote unquote, worse than ever right now in that our meals are worked around what will they eat. And I'm like, this is only going to continue. And I mean, we do try to continually expose them to new stuff and know that like they're not going to one day just ask for asparagus. Like we have to provide it. But it is kind of amazing how easy it is to get into some kind of like a funk and a slump like that. And that's a major point of what's the word that I was just using? Like not risk, but a major point of sacrifice of having a big family is that the meals become very simple and basic. And I'm like, well, I guess that's part of our life now for the next 18 years because this baby's not even born yet. But anyways, okay, one of the other things about being not in a community is just the overall chronic stress and elevated cortisol that comes from that in our experience as humans and mothers. And even just to the littlest, tiniest things, like how much we're going to use Google in the middle of the night or like reinventing the wheel. This is one of the things that I try to prevent with my pregnancy and postpartum class is like not reinventing the wheel because so much of our wisdom of how to mother and what to do and da 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 was word of mouth passed down and taught in the moment as well. And unfortunately, not I can't duplicate me 10,000 times and like put me in your room, but you can have these like resources that you learn about and then you can come back to. And so that you're not scouring blogs and forums and hearing about all of the different varying opinions, you can just get it from one resource that's hopefully comprehensive and then, kind of talks about what are the facts, the informed consent about things. And then, yeah, of course, everyone's gonna have their own experience. But a lot of people will talk about their experience like it's the fact. And I'm like, no, that's just what happened to you. And that's cool. But there is other things that could have happened, like this, that, and the other thing. And blah, 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 blah. Like, whatever. Like, you're really lucky you were able to. Your baby, you slept trained them at, by 8 weeks and they slept through the night and you maintained your milk supply. That's hella rare, okay? That is really, really rare that you were able to maintain a full milk supply and exclusively nurse your baby. Like, that doesn't happen most of the time. If you wean too early at night at that age, like, just as one example of a nuance. So, anyways, humans are cooperative animals. It's not just about help, it's about a deep sense of satisfaction and love and care and feeling cared for. And also for the people who are, this is an angle that I don't feel like we talk about enough. The angle of the people who are helping the person, they are getting an extreme level of deep heart satisfaction that isn't talked about. And I think there's like this, like, what, you expect everybody else to just like take care of you? They have their own lives and they're busy and da da da, like as if it's a huge out, like it's a. And it's like, okay, you can frame shift it and you can think about it like that if you want to. Like, have fun in your negative little bubble of life. Sorry. Like, I don't feel that way. I feel like a new baby is born of one of our friends and I get to make them a meal. I get to go over and see if I can help with something or, whatever it is. And I know I'm, you and I are in our own steep of our families, but there's going to come a day where we're grandmas or our kids are adults. And hopefully we can still be steeped in the who are the new babies being born in our local community? Can we bring them food? Our kids' friends and stuff like that. Can we take their other adult kids on a walk outside for 30 minutes and get them out of the house or, just whatever it is. It's actually an honor to be invited into the space when a new baby is born. Or, imagine in church groups and stuff, like if somebody had to have some kind of major surgery or like, God forbid, a spouse tragically died, like everybody rallies around them and it feels good to be able to rally around people and support them. So I don't want us to get away with this idea thinking like
Like
you're.
giving is only giving and you don't receive. It's reciprocal.
Yes, it's
It's
reciprocal and
mutually
it's a.
beneficial.
Yes, exactly. It's mutually beneficial on a deep human level. And if for some reason somebody's not feeling that, like, okay, then I guess don't do it. But most people will feel like it is, it's service. And
Well, and
they're.
they probably don't feel like that because they're burned out. If
Yes.
we were getting what we needed, like you're talking about, as animals, it's a chain reaction because if we as a community and we as women are all getting our needs met, then giving and being of service to others is another part of our pillar that just fills our cup rather than feeling like it's draining us. Mm-hmm. We feel drained when our cup is already empty and we are already burned out. So to give to another feels impossible. But that's also where motherhood, I think, gets really hard for women if they enter into pregnancy and postpartum in that same state of burnout, because then they have a child to take care of. And it's like, you need your cup to be runneth over to give and give. Otherwise there is resentment and there is depression and there is all of this stuff that really shouldn't be there if all of your needs are being met, because then you can just give to this new being that, you know, and then the baby gives back too. I was having a conversation like this with some friends the other day about the resentment that can happen in a relationship. Any relationship. It could be a romantic relationship. It can also be a mother-child relationship where it's hard to take care of kids. And let's say you don't have kids and you just see this like wild kid who's kind of being naughty, and you look upon that situation and be like, oh my God, that looks like hell. I would never want to do that. Like, what could this parent possibly, you know, want to do that? Yet you don't see the snuggles at night and like the little kisses that they give. And like, there's so much, even though it's hard work, quote unquote, and there's a lot that you give to your child, there's so much that you receive in most of the time. And like one of our friends was talking about how that wasn't her experience, because her child was actually so challenging with neurodevelopmental issues and a lot of other things that she felt really guilty of actually having like that almost resentment. Because if you looked at it, her like total of the day, she was actually giving extremely more than she was getting. And not getting that like you have to get, but it's like you still get things. It's just like when you kiss your partner, you also receive like dopamine and oxytocin. Even if you're the one giving, you receive as well. And so that's what you're talking about, is there is this like give and take in reciprocal relationships, and there has to kind of be that balance for you to feel like you're not completely burned out. And so I think it's not even just about the mom and the new baby. It's about the whole community, for everyone to be vibrant. And it's just a healthy ecosystem.
Yeah. And if we didn't get anything, we wouldn't have kids. Like, that's why people are obsessed with it, because they do actually get so much out of it. But I just had a thought, and this is going to ruffle feathers, I think, sometimes, but I think it would be hard to continually feel like you do get a lot when your kids are gone all day. If they're in a schooling system where they're gone from 7 to 4 or whatever it is, like, that would be tricky, because then what do you do? It's like, okay, after school activities, you're having very little actual contact point in time with them. And I'm not saying that every single kid that goes to public school is not having a reciprocal relationship with their parent. I'm just saying I could see how that would be trickier, because there's even times here in my own house, and my kids go to, you know, both of our kids go to the same school, and it's like part-time, it's only 4 days a week. You know, it's not a big deal. It is a chunk out of the day, but they're home a lot too. Mm-hmm. But even just like with my son being outside and playing with the cousins and different stuff, like sometimes I don't see him very often. And I'm like, wow, this would be wild if this is what my experience every day of you was like, where I only saw you for like an hour and then I saw you on the weekends. Mm-hmm. But I'm so used to seeing my kids like for the majority of the day, all the time, every day, you know. Anyway, okay. Mm-hmm. That might be, you know, something that isn't true. I don't know, because we haven't had public school experience, but it just makes sense to me that long periods of time away would have the potential of eroding a relationship. Like, I feel like that's just a fact. That would be that way with your partner if you
What we learned about with the whole, you know, if we really want to talk about ruffling feathers of like where the traditional school system came from, it started over in Prussia, because the soldiers were not performing well, they weren't loyal to their nation, and so they brought in this traditional school system that we have adopted in the U.S. And it was about breaking down the relationship with the child and the family, so that they were more committed to the state than they were to their family. And you do that by keeping them away, you know, for long periods of time. And I'm not saying that you can't send your kids to school, that you can't be away from them, but it's just being mindful, right? Of, okay, now I do have my child in their home. Is my only experience of them that they're being naughty, that we're fighting, that we're like, that I'm feeling burned out because I've been giving all day and now all I'm doing is giving, and there's no, you're not setting up and creating environments for there to be that reciprocal, like, love and, you know, cup filling experience. I think it's important to create that even if you don't get to see your kids a lot.
Yeah. And then just like shuttling them off to different sports and things, and how little actual time there is to connect with them. So anyway, it's just something to think about. It's And it's hard because, again, this is one of those things. It's like, well, sometimes in a modern setting of two parents working, that is what has to happen. And, but we need to understand still, though, it's still a cost. We are setting up a situation so that we can do XYZ so we can have more money at the cost of blah, blah, blah. Like every action we have has a cost. Me choosing to have this fifth kid is going to have several costs for myself, my kids, my relationship, whatever. It also has more benefits than costs, and that's why we chose to do it. But in our opinion, but not to all people. There's like, no, there's too much cost in those situations. We just have to understand like what we're doing there. So another thing that is a big, two main other big lifestyle things besides living outside of community and then how that affects our your whole everything as a person in general. And this is like, you know, sometimes people will be like, well, I'm really introverted. I don't need community. And it's like, no, you do. You may be introverted, but fundamentally, we die in isolation. Like, it's not a conspiracy theory. Okay? Like, this is just a known thing. You do need to have a community. And there's an artificial sense of community right now because of the internet and social media that is tricking people into fulfilling this need. And it is not the same level of fulfillment. And it's going to become one of those like chronic underlying things where, oh, you didn't actually have that much contact with real life people in real life world. You were talking to them on Facebook all day, thinking that you had this. And there's a micro part of that which may be fulfilled in that setting, but it is not the well-rounded soft. It's like using the red light potentially versus being under the soft sun all day for 8 to 10 hours a day and experiencing that sort of for your like cellular health. So anyway, speaking of sun, so we are inside, indoors all the time. That was never a thing. We're a very, you know, infrequent thing. The lack of just being exposed, and I know there's a lot of controversy about sun and skin cancer, and we're not gonna go there. The fact of the matter is, our ancestors were inside of their huts and shelters very little. Under the shade of trees, maybe, you know, whatever like animals do. You see, like lions take breaks from the sun. They're not just laying in the hot sun all day, and that's fine. But fundamentally, something very large happened when we all moved indoors. And this has a slow, years-long eroding effect. It's not acute, like, oh, I ate a battery and now I'm having an acute toxicity. It's not like that. It's a slow wear and tear, and I think more of an epigenetic standpoint if we were to zoom out. Same thing with lack of sleep and our overall dysfunctional sleep, which maybe is partially because of disrupted circadian rhythms from hormone disruptors, from again that lack of sun, the lack of morning sun, particularly blue light, red light, LED, or sorry, not red light, blue light from screens, LED lights in our homes, fluorescent lights. All of this messing up our melatonin system and the way that our brain is perceiving, is it daytime? Is it nighttime? What's out? Daytime, nighttime, daytime,
Hilarious.
nighttime. That's one of like the OG memes. That was like a,
It was like one of the original viral videos. It was
yeah,
so
that was
good.
like E-bombs world.
That
Remember
and like
that?
the cups, like drinking out of cups, the
Oh yeah,
little like
like a bitch.
yeah.
Yeah. Oh my
I
gosh.
know this is one thing you're talking about sun and sleep and like everyone hears that like, yeah, it is so hard. It's so hard for me to get in outside enough because we don't work outside, and this is something my mom brought up over the holidays again. We had a lot of interesting conversations, but we were talking about men and testosterone and how all like so many men's testosterone is low and why that is. And toxins are a huge part of that. We know like all of these toxins that we're making in all our products, but she said something that was really interesting that we have thought about, but people just bring up certain things and it makes you think about it. She's like, men are meant to work outside. And I was like, interesting, because she comes from a family of ranchers and laborers and like people who are outside all day long. And now everyone, because she's looking around, like we're all on our computer, right? We all work from home, quote unquote, all the people that were at our holiday thing, but we're all just like sitting on computers all day. And it's like, she's so right. Like men's testosterone rises so much when they chop wood. It's this like really cool
Oh.
study, I think, that they did where men who chop wood. It's more even than working out. Yes, working out, like going to a gym and lifting weights helps, but there's something even more powerful when they're outside chopping wood. It's like you're saying that's there's something that's triggering some ancient wisdom that our body knows. Like chopping wood was the original providing act, right? Because that's how we stayed warm. It's how we cooked our food. I mean, from the millennia, since the beginning of time, when fire was like a thing that we started, men chopped wood. I'm sure women chopped wood too, but it was like traditionally a male thing. And like, not only do men not chop wood anymore, there's like zero in some circumstances of men working outside at all.
Yeah, or with their hands or doing anything.
Their hands or anything. And it's like, yeah, that is a huge part of testosterone. And it probably is this feedback loop, just like women probably have a healthy feedback loop when they're nurturing, you know, when they're holding a baby, it increases oxytocin and it increases all of these things that inherently we need. And it's this positive feedback loop of the more you do it, the more you have it. And then it like creates this thing. And so with men, it's the same of, you know, the more you do labor with your hands and do blah, 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 all this stuff, the more you create more of that masculine energy to do more of it. And it's lacking, right, in this captivity society that we're talking about.
Right. Like to provide on whatever level that is going to provide a deep level of satisfaction. And for women, it's usually, yeah, to nurture up some level. But it's like, think about, yeah, teachers, nurses, social workers, all those people are women. And so they're getting, even if they don't become mothers, they're getting that need fulfilled in that sort of a way. Mm-hmm. And then with men, being in some kind of like other different role where there's more of a providing side of it. And so there, this can be one of those deep eroders too. And not everybody's the same, of course. Like, we know that there's individual dynamics here at play, but mm-hmm. as a general vast overview, that is a truth. That just is the way that it is. Otherwise our society would not be the way that it is. It wouldn't be here. We wouldn't have as many people on the planet. There has to be an inherent general role, just like there is in animal couples mm-hmm. or like male and animal, like, you know, you think about gorillas have one of the biggest sexual dimorphism, meaning the difference between the physical attributes of the male and female. It's like the biggest difference of a lot of other animals. Like the size of a male silverback gorilla compared to a female gorilla is astronomical. Like, it's not just a slight difference, you know, where it's like peacocks. Okay. The male have these like fun feathers. That's actually kind of a big deal too. But what is it like? Some other kind of bird, you could say, where the males are a little bit flashier and the female, like a duck, okay? The males have this green on them, the females are brown. Like, that's a really common thing so that the females can hide and protect their young and they're not discovered and the males can be flashier and, you know.
Or whatever. Even a horse. I mean, outside of the reproductive genitalia, it's really hard to tell if a horse is a girl or a boy.
Yeah, and same thing with dogs and cats, you know, all sorts of stuff. But no, with gorillas, it's a huge, huge difference. And it's, you know, that's for the level of protection and providing like a safe, what are they called, like a group of gorillas, like a colony or whatever it is, you know, so that they can
be troop.
A troop, yeah, maybe, like, yeah. Oh, definitely. Chimpanzees are troops for sure, I think.
Oh, you're, and maybe you're, it's right, not a troop.
But whatever it is, a herd of gorillas.
a band of gorillas.
Oh, it's like a gaggle of gorillas, whatever it is. They, yeah, we'll, the male being the way he looks is intimidating to like other neighboring, you know, they don't eat meat. It's not because he needs to go and kill something to eat. It's all about like protection, providing, and intimidation. It's, that's why.
Wow, that's interesting.
So, okay, anyways, we're not under the sun anymore. We have disrupted sleep from all of our different things. You know, we wake up in the morning and we have toxins barraging us from all angles. And it's like, we just have to think about these things. I'm not saying this to be like, provoke your anxiety. I hope I'm not. I hope I'm just providing context for how and why we've gotten to this place where it feels so tough and hard sometimes. Like, why is it the motherhood can feel so hard? Why is it that just modern living in general can feel so hard? And we are really, truly living outside of what we like need in almost every angle and degree. Yeah. We never go outside. Our sleep is disrupted. We're alone a lot of the time, or we are behind screens. Oh, we don't move our bodies. We are sitting in chairs all the time. Sitting is the new smoking. Like, we used to be constantly doing from one thing to the next, but also with some like rest and chill, not in the, in a anxious constant doing. Cause you and I, and most people in this world are constantly doing something and they are so over busy and overworked. There's so much to do. There's so little time. Da, da, da. Like, we are doing. That's not what I mean, though. Like, we used to be moving around and using our bodies functionally in ways that got the, you know, and then lots of walking and picking up things that were heavy and moving them around. And it's not like they worked out. They weren't like exercising. They didn't need to. It wasn't part of, animals don't work out. They just use their bodies to live. And like, when you don't have food built up, another really great book that completely changed my life is a book called Ishmael, speaking of gorillas, by Daniel Quinn. And I'll put this all in the show notes. Ishmael is such an amazing, fantastic book. If you've never read it, absolutely put it on your TBR, your to be read list this year. It is shortish, and it's basically the whole premise of the book is that this man sees an ad in the newspaper for somebody who wants to like change the world. So he responds to the newspaper ad. He goes to this location where it says to go, and it's this gorilla behind this piece of glass who telepathically communicates to him. And basically, what it is Daniel Quinn's beliefs about how humans got to this dysfunctional point in society. But that's like the
Wow.
baseline plot is like the gorilla's telling the guy, whatever.
Yeah.
It is so I had never thought about some of these concepts before about how like the agricultural revolution actually totally screwed us because now we
Yeah.
could lock up food and put it behind a paywall and how that changed everything. Because when your food was, yeah, you were tending to the garden while others were going out to collect big game and you were constantly processing. Oh, another book to read is The Red Tent. The Red Tent is
Yeah.
such a good one, and it actually has this like whole like menstruation and midwifery aspect of the whole thing. And then the second half of the book actually like is so different, like the biggest plot twist I could have ever seen coming. But the first part of it is about how this girl grows up in this village and like how they pre would prepare the village would prepare every month for the new moon when all the women would bleed together because their cycles were all synced up, so they'd bleed for 3 days so the women wouldn't be like doing all the normal chores that the women were doing, so they had to do it in preparation so that they could just rest during their bleed. And it's so beautiful. It's such a good book. Oh my God, I should just reread it. But
They
anyway,
did make a
like
movie. They did make a movie about it, but the book is so much better, I think. Always. The book's always
always the
better.
book better. Yeah. Ooh, that's
But
interesting.
yeah.
I didn't know that. I'll read it again and then
Yeah, you should
actually
watch the movie. I know you're not a big movie watcher. I
I'm
love
not,
me a
but I
good
would watch
movie.
that though. I would watch
Yeah,
that because just to
it's
see.
good. It's really good. But yeah, I was gonna say something though around all of that. I know you're
Yes.
kind of trying to wrap up, but now it's leaving me. Keep
Poof.
going. You keep going. It'll come back.
Okay, so I'm kind of like looking at my list here and I'm just talking about where are these things. Okay, nutrient depletion. There's another one. Like the food that we eat now is not quite the same. The topsoil in which the food is grown, from which it can pull its nutrients, is not the same and it
Oh,
has
yeah.
less. And so then the food that we eat is going to have less. So then overall, our nutrient density has decreased. We're not eating seasonally anymore. Like all of this, do you see how it's like you would be doing that before you'd only eat what was seasonally grown and local to you. And if you didn't live at a certain latitude where you had citrus, you'd never ever encounter in your life citrus. And that's okay. You can get your vitamin C other ways and you can get other stuff other ways. There's all kinds of food out there that people don't eat because they don't live in that kind of climate or in that country or whatever it is. But like you can get your needs met anywhere. Usually, although it's kind of hard in the north and stuff, but they do. That's when they eat tons and tons of blubber and seafood and stuff. So then they get all their fat-soluble vitamins somehow, but it's tricky for them to do it. Okay, what were you going to say that you remembered?
Yeah, well, there were two things. I love this. I mean, people who aren't nerds on history or root cause might not love some of our episodes, but I just think they're so cool because I think it's just important to know why we are in the place that we are in order for us to change it. But the same thing goes for just, I feel like the middle of the last century, the 1900s for the most part, there was such this move, and it probably started way before that. In fact, it probably really did. But just such this move of technology, but I think it was better living through chemistry, was sort of a line of the middle of the last century that was put out a lot because there was this new chemical evolution, just like there's been an industrial revolution and there's been an agricultural revolution. There was a chemical revolution of, oh my gosh, we can invent all of these things with chemistry. We can make plastic wrap and look, I can put it around the bowl and I can do all of these things. And there's this idea, and it still is very much split. And this is kind of the new conversation with AI where we are going to invent things to do it better. And we're going to have all of these things because technology can do it better, chemistry can do it better, AI can do it better, whatever. Yet that mentality takes us farther and farther away from the essence of who we are, like you're talking about. And is it actually better? And in reality, I think maybe not, because what you're talking about of all of the things that our body inherently needs is all of the simple things and the things that are actually hard. I tell my patients this a lot and the people in my membership that it's really sad and unfun, and I hate being the one that has to share this news, but almost anything that makes your life easier or more convenient is not good for you, which sucks. It's like, That sucks. Like, no one wants to hear that. It's like that when you soak your grains overnight and then you ground them up and then you, you know, plant the food and you don't use like anything, like think about anything convenient. It typically has a cost, like you said. And how, but the other thing I wanted to say is this conversation isn't just doom and gloom about all of these things and why did we get here. I think the biggest takeaway to take from this episode is when you make choices every single day, think about it from this lens of I am an animal that needs certain things. It's not being picky. It's not being like bougie, like, oh, she needs to go in the sun. Like, oh, you know, like that's such a privilege to go outside. It's just like, no. Or she needs to move or she needs to eat a certain way. We don't think that about our animals. You know, we never look at our dog and we're like, oh my God, you are so entitled that you think you need to go outside and run around. How dare you think that? We just know that's what happens. Dogs need to go run around. Like, you either have to give them a yard or you take them on a walk. That's a non-negotiable. They have to move their body. And no one argues that. Even people in, you know, New York take their dogs on walks. They get them out because we just know, like you said at the beginning of this episode. And how do you make the decisions in your life, whether you're a mom or not, and with your children as well, every day to say, what aspect, and just pick one thing a day, what aspect of my lifestyle do I need to focus on for today to give myself what it needs? Because this is like a non-negotiable. It absolutely needs it. It's not a luxury. It's not self-care. It's not like, oh, I do this once in a while. You know, this is absolutely a necessity. We have to start integrating this back into our lives. And unfortunately, we have to be mindful, and it is counterculture, which sucks.
Yeah, because you have to actively make that choice against working on your computer or cleaning your house or doing whatever it is, you know. And yeah. I love that you said that, because when I was an exchange student in Sweden between high school and college, that was one of my main takeaways about the culture there, was that things like exercise for them are as duh, no brainer as pooping and peeing in the toilet. It's like you pee in the poop in the toilet. You recycle, like colored glass, glass with the label, clear glass. Like the recycling centers in Sweden blew my mind. And when we would go to drop off our recycling for the week, it would take like 45 minutes because you'd have to put all the different stuff in all the different bins. And like my host families had been collecting it that way, and unbeknownst to me until we got there, you know. But then all of the 16, 70-year-old people at the gym working out, they're like, oh, there's, I have to move my body now. It's time for my movement. Non-negotiable. Absolutely. Just something that they understood as a trick, like, and I'd be like, wow, that's so cool, you're so like fit and you still go to the gym, like, good for you, because in America that's not happening, you know. And they're I mean, she looked gobsmacked. She looked like I was saying, wow, isn't it so cool that you still pee and poop in the toilet, not just in a diaper? Or you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like you still breathe air. That's so cool that you're choosing that every day.
Exactly. Like I wanted strawberries or something. And I, you know, it's probably, maybe it's different now. This was in 2008, nine, but there was no strawberries in Sweden grocery stores, Swedish grocery stores in the winter. Like, sorry, you can't get that now. And then in the fall when apples were ripe, every single thing you ate contained apple, like an apple sauce or some kind of side dish or some kind of dessert had apples, or you were eating apple flavored chicken or like whatever, you know what I mean? Like when things were ripe. And I just loved it. I thought it was so cool how integrated some of these health things were into the culture. Okay. And then I'll wrap up here. But one other thing I wanted to say is one of the Blue Zone things is a spiritual component. So all cultures throughout the world have some sort of a spiritual belief system, and being like believing in something outside of ourselves is one of the components of Blue Zones. It is one of the components of like overall satisfaction and life and purpose and stuff for many people. I mean, most people, I would say. So there's that. And then also with the diet, and we talked about the nutrient density already, but there's like an overall tenet in Blue Zones and in indigenous cultures of less food. Like they didn't eat as much food as we eat every day now. Also, they ate way more plants. So there's this idea called like a plant slant. And you can eat meat and be very pro like high protein diet while also eating a lot of plants. And that would probably be overarching the best diet for most people would be a lot of plants with also meat. And because of the micronutrients in plants and the fiber and all the different health benefits on a long standing, like over the course of a lifetime, you know, it's yeah, okay, so there's that. And then, you know, we have this constant sensory overload at all angles. We don't have as much chill and just down rest time where we're not scrolling and then continuing to feed our brains. And one really beautiful aspect about being a human that differs us or, you know, differentiates us from other animals is our brain and all the different things we can do with it. But then it's a huge source of the cortisol, the chronic stress, and we can make ourselves have like a living hell of experience of life, which would contribute overall to like dis-ease or disease or cancer or different things or whatever it is, or just a suffering experience of life because of our big brain. And back to community and stuff too. We were never ever privy to all of the problems of the world when we lived in our
Oh,
little
don't even get me started on
bands and
that.
tribes. No, I know. I know. And it's a constant barrage on our taking advantage of our heartstrings because of humans. And it's tricky because we do live, unfortunately, in a global community. And politics are really difficult. And American politics, we love to get in everyone's business. And we love to like be the savior or whatever. And I'm sure there's been a lot of really net beneficial things that have happened in those settings, and also a lot of net negative things that have happened. And us as civilians experiencing the news and hearing about every single thing that's going on wrong and who got shot and who da da da, whatever. It's just we have to remind ourselves, as much as we want to be like activists for what we believe in and not allowing people to be oppressed or put in situations and wanting to do something about it, you also have to protect yourself somehow. Like there's
I
a
know.
fine line balance of what you intake. And I'm a huge advocate for women who are pregnant and postpartum to put the pause on that. Unlikely are you as your one single, this is a truth. You can ar argue with me if you want to, and it's true almost all of the time. You, for your 9 months of pregnancy and say first year postpartum, are very, very unlikely to actually enact change to whatever it is that's going on in the world that is stressing you out and causing you cognitive duress, hurting your heart when you're in the most sensitive time period in your entire life, where you are cracked wide open because you just brought in life and can feel to a depth that you probably never had before. Even after you, as you have subsequent children, I feel like the well just gets deeper and deeper. And we don't need to be intaking that kind of information. Put a pause on it. Is it a privilege to be able to do that? Yes. And understand that that's okay too. You're still making a conscious choice to put a pause on it to protect you and your baby, who you do have control over, who you do have control over affecting their life and you affecting your life and being so stressed out or heartbroken. Even if you don't really feel like, oh, it's stressing you out that much, it probably is because it's in the back of your mind. You're thinking about it in the middle of the night. You're still trying to process. It's trauma. It's micro trauma every time you hear about it and see the videos. And we should never be seeing these things on video. And you just don't have to be the one to take it in right now. And I mean, a lot of people are like that for their whole lives. They really, I know a lot of people who cannot handle the news. They're empathic or they take it too to heart too closely to heart or whatever. And it's like not just them watching the news and then moving on with their life. It's like them watching the news and obsessing over it, and it's completely destroying their life. They're getting so upset about it. And so if that's you have to change that. There has to be something that you do instead. And if nothing else, just remember what we're saying here on this podcast is that we did not develop and adapt over time with that kind of knowledge. And we would have never known. We would have only ever known about the problems of our immediate community members where we could actually enact change. That's the other thing. It's like, okay, we just know about all this bullshit, terrible stuff that's happening, and we have no way to change it. And yeah, okay, there's like grassroots movements where you can donate money and you can call your senator and okay, cool. But that isn't actually like, oh, JoJo broke her leg. I'm gonna go and like help her. Oh, so-and-so's wife died. I'm gonna go and like help him. Actually, physically, and like enact change and feel that again, that deep satisfaction of helping your community members. You see, it's like all this like cyclical thing. No, with that, with watching the news and seeing terrible things happen, it's like a cock or not cock block. It's like blue balls. It's like, oh, And then again and again, and you just see all those
yeah,
like
and you
negative
feel
stuff. And
helpless, and then it spirals you into depression.
Yeah, and
you
can't do anything about it. And you're just like
and then
helpless.
It just lowers the vibration of the whole planet, which I think personally is the whole intention of it. I do think that the news is not for good and is for evil for that purpose, because inherently it keeps everybody addicted to trauma and lowered vibration across the board. And pregnancy and postpartum, I think, are the most important, but I would also throw in there anyone who's trying to conceive.
Yeah.
But even children and teenagers, like they also shouldn't know. Like teenagers going through school and stuff, they're still trying to figure out who they are and how they fit in the world. Like I also personally don't think that they also should be watching all of this, because they're still trying to figure out who they are and how the world works. It's just only like the very strong, cognitively stable men and the women who are not actively pursuing reproduction should only be the ones who even know about it, let alone like it's just to me, it's so inappropriate that we in the America and the United States have commercials for pharmaceuticals and that we have the news that is broadcast into anybody's home that anyone could watch at any time. I think that's the most inappropriate thing in the world. Like, I even went over to a friend's house the other day over Christmas and they just had the news on in the background, and I have my two little kids. And I'm like, I literally said, I was like, can you turn the news off? Like, who knows what is going to pop up on that screen? I have a 4-year-old. Mm-hmm. How? Why would you just have the news on? Like, that's insane. To me, that's like having, I don't know, some crazy traumatic thing that like you don't even know what's coming. It's not like a movie that I've screened before. It's like the trauma that happens there is, don't even get me started on the news. I agree. I think it's crazy. We were never evolved to have that. And societies and nervous systems are absolutely being destroyed. And I think it's one of the major, major factors in why people are so sick and like emotionally and mentally sick right now.
Yeah, it's not to be taken lightly. And I understand what we're saying. We're saying like, don't participate in like whatever. You know yourself though. Like mm-hmm. if you're somebody who can handle it, or you feel empowered by that knowledge, or you're like doing something about it, or what, I don't know, whatever, or you're like numbed out and so you can handle as much as possible, that's not good either. But I guess if you want to feel like that, that's fine. But if you're somebody who follows some news outlets or is watching it, and yeah, you're just like scrolling along and then all of a sudden, boom, it just pops up that it's somebody, a video of somebody getting shot, and or pictures of the children in Gaza or something where it's just like terrible, crazy stuff. Like, sometimes we have to take a break. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And it really is hard to say that because I get the privilege there. I do. And sometimes what we can do to caretake for our world is to take care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And if that means not ruining your life from the extreme cost of intaking all this information and making it like something that you're spiraling out of control about and is making you depressed, and like, you know, you're talking about your therapist of all of the problems in the world, and the reason why you're upset is because the world's so messed up. Like, that's the type of person that needs to take a break from watching and being involved in all this kind of stuff and just say, okay, I'm going to just like buckle down and be local. Like, what can I choose? What's a problem in my life? Probably, honestly, those types of people are important, and they need to, if you want to have an outlet to feel like you're enacting change, then just go local. Yeah. There's tons of problems that are happening in your local community. I can 100%. Guarantee it. There are women who are suffering domestic abuse cases and are on the street. There are people who are needing assistance in various different forms. There are immigrants that are, you know, integrating into society and that they need like English lessons and or whatever it is. Like, there's so many different things.
Yeah. We don't all have to be warriors. I mean, there was a reason why they were warriors in villages and why they were healers in villages and why they were the medicine women and the mothers. Like, we all had a role, and not the whole village would go to the battle lines and like see all of the battle all the time. Like, that's not meant for everybody. So mm-hmm. if you're a warrior, like my husband, he is 100% a warrior. He would be a warrior if we lived in a tribe environment, and he can handle it. And he's the one that watches the news so that he knows what's going on. I do not need to sit there and watch the news and know everything. He tells me anything I need to know if it pertains to me. We need to pack up the children, you know, and move the village because the tigers are coming or whatever. Like, he can tell me that. I don't need to be on the front line. We don't all have to be warriors in that way. But like you said, we can be nurturers in our environment. Like, if you're more of a nurturer because you aren't a warrior, because you can't handle it or it's just too much, you can still help. You can still help the village without being the warrior, because not everybody is fit to be the warrior. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And it gives you a fulfilling sense of purpose to help in some other kind of creative capacity that feels not so devastating about your life and in what's happening around you. So being in service, I mean, that's one of the things that I love about churches is in like how much, like we went to a pre-Christmas church service and they were talking about this program that they did. Gosh, what was it? You know, it's always, there's like toy drives and stuff for families and like even our personal friend group organized a couple of different holiday-based things for some community members in our local community. One like waitress and one little young family that had a baby that was born with severe complications that they weren't expecting. And so that felt really good to like gather around in our friend group and just like serve those two families. And it was amazing. But at the church group, they were talking about a program that they did for local men, local like working men, you know, electricians, plumbers, linemen, different men who were struggling. Gosh, I don't know. It was such a niche group. I was like, how, whose idea was this? But it also made so much sense. Like they were like alone, they don't have a partner or whatever it is and are kind of struggling. And specifically men, you know, too, women gather around each other a lot. Like we do have a communal sort of need that I do think is outside of the realm of what men need. Like we have more needs in that side, most of us, but it's not like men don't need it. They do, but men just do alongside each other. That is what they want, is to like do things and hang out. Maybe they're not going to get
together.
Yeah, chop wood. They're not going to get together and talk about their emotions. But anyways, there was just like a service project that I thought was really sweet. That was about kind of like rallying around these men who are struggling in the society. And I thought that was so cool. And there's different little things that you can do to help out in and be involved. And again, that's, now you're hitting multiple birds with one stone of what do we need to have deep human satisfaction and health and happiness of serving a community, being in there, having a purpose, like, you know, doing something physical. It just fills you in a different kind of way than even just donating on like GoFundMe. So anyways, okay. I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. I didn't mean it for it to be doom and gloom. I just like there to be an outline of the context from which where we came and where we are now and why some of these things can feel tricky and hard and how do we combat them and how do we understand them and say, oh, okay, well, that's right. Like normally I would be outside all day long and I've only been outside for 25 minutes. And maybe that's why I'm feeling a little anxious. Like, you know,
zero minutes.
There's that joke, that meme or that reel about going outside and touching grass after like talking to your in-laws on the phone or something like that. And they're like rubbing like leaves all over their face. And it's so true. Like there's a nature therapy aspect of things because that's where we came from. It's not nature therapy. It would be like a goldfish putting them back into clean water and being like, here's your clean water therapy.
Yeah.
Totally. It's like, or giving it's a mouse emerging. Like a little dark tunnel to run around in, and you're like, here, it's dark tunnel run around time for you.
Yeah, you
like,
get it for 1 minute. Enjoy.
Yeah. And then the rest of their day, they're in like a big, vast space under a bright light with nowhere to hide. Like that would be a mouse's nightmare, you know? Yeah. Anyways. Okay. All right. Yep. Love you. Thanks for talking to me. Check out all the show notes. We have a lot of resources for you.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.